Jupiter Broadcasting presents this program in stereo.
This episode brought to you by GoDaddy.com.
This week on the Linux Action Show, it's the top four action ways to back up data under Linux. Then we've got some leaked details about Nokia's upcoming Premier Migo device. Does it blow us away? Stay tuned to find out. Plus, we take Slashdot to school. Oh, this week on the Linux Action Show. Ha!
And welcome to Linux Action Show, Season 13, Episode 4. This is the 124th episode of the Linux Action Show. My name is Brian. That guy is Chris.
Hey there, Brian. The series of pocketbook e-readers will all be running Linux.
Of course they were.
And this is going to be so cool. So this is going to join the Kindle and the Nook as Linux-based e-readers.
And the Sony readers.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And every e-reader on the planet.
Pretty much,
what,
huh?
What e-reader doesn't run...
I don't actually know if there must be some,
like an iPad, I guess.
Maybe, or I'm sure like HP will probably crap something out running WebOS. I'm sure you get that, right?
They'll doesn't WebOS have like a Linux kernel?
Yeah, oh, it's true.
Linux-based. Yeah, so that's Linux-based.
Yep. WebOS is probably more Linux-based than Android
OS is. Yeah. WebOS is basically just, Linux with like a browser on top.
Yeah, these things are going to be pretty cool. They're going to have a whole series from like with a 6-inch e-ink screen all the way up to a nicer 10-inch model with a color TFT display and,
Really? A color TFT display on an e-book reader?
Yeah.
Have they said like what kind of, is that a touch screen or... Oh, like a color touchscreen display?
The fact that they have physical controls on the device makes me think it's not
touchscreen. Because it says touchscreen for the black and white 7 one.
Yeah. But the color one is 7 inches, and it doesn't say touchscreen.
Okay.
So I'm not sure. Maybe it just might have been something left out from the article. But
that could be cool.
It makes me want.
I wonder what the battery life would be on like that with like a TFT color screen. Because, that's like the whole point
of
those.
It's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, too, so it's going to have that sucking up the battery.
Damn.
Now, we've got to say holla to the boys over at GoDaddy. But I have been experimenting, a great, fantastic experiment. It's going to be tied into my Android app, and I want to tell you guys about that. But why don't we say holla first?
Are we going to say holla first?
Yeah, let's holla over to our boys. At the GoDaddy.
Like I thought for a minute I was going to say holla to the boys at GoDaddy. And then what happened
I teased.
You started talking. You teased something that was going to happen in like 12 seconds.
Well, people have a short attention span.
You're welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm excited. I couldn't help. I wanted to share. I'm so excited.
This is what we think of you, our viewers.
It's not so much that. Is that I'm such a little excited fanboy for my new idea that
All right. Hey, Chris.
Oh, what?
This episode of Linux Action Show is sponsored by GoDaddy.com, the world's largest web host and domain name registrar. If you're ready to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has got you covered. Domain names as low as $1.99 plus world-class hosting with unlimited disk space and bandwidth, do-it-yourself website builders, dedicated servers, SSL certificates, and so much more. Plus, as a Linux Action Show viewer, enter promo code Linux. That's Linux, L-I-N-U-X, at checkout. Take an additional 10% off your entire order. Some restrictions may apply. See site for details. Get your piece of internet now at GoDaddy.org. No, it's .com.
Although they probably would own them all, I would think. Also,
I don't actually know. I'm assuming they do.
We should say Linux 20.
GoDaddy.co.edu.uk or something.
Linux 20 gets you 20% off hosting. Guess what?
What?
Some of the guys we work with at GoDaddy were in town this weekend. We didn't have a chance to go down there and see them because of our shooting schedule.
No.
I just found out about it via the Facebook.
No.
I know. I had bought those guys a beer.
I would have too.
They've been sponsors for like ever, so I had bought them
for
a beer.
For years now.
Now, why don't we talk about this crazy experiment of mine that I'm going.
Yeah.
This will be my Android pick for this week. I've maybe talked about this app before. Probably not that much because they don't have a Linux desktop client, but it's Evernote. I have talked about it on Jupiter at Night.
Evernote's pretty cool.
Evernote is cool.
It's cool. I mean, to be able to take your notes and take audio notes and do all these different kinds of notes and have them synced across all your machines is handy. It's just like it's like Dropbox or Ubuntu One
for note taking. Yeah. And it's cool because it'll do audio annotations.
Yep.
And this is where it's great with the Android or any other mobile device. You take the picture of, like, say, a sign or a business card.
Yep.
And then inside the Evernote application, it uploads it to the Evernote service and does an OCR. So, like, I don't even keep business cards anymore.
Yeah,
it just, I just take pictures of it.
It strips all the text out of the picture and adds it as a note.
And it has, it has a nice, very nice web agent, too. So if you are on a system where you don't have it installed, you can get that. It's all searchable and taggable, and it does geolocation, too, so you can find notes that you've taken around you. It's really good for keeping track of all that kind of stuff. Here's what I'm going to use it for. Is Evernote pitches itself as, like, an electronic memory. And I am memory challenged.
Yeah, you don't remember anything. No. And it has nothing to do with any sort of herbal substance.
Nope.
I'm going to state that unequivocally, that it does not have to do with that.
I think it has more to do with, like, working 50 hours a week and doing so many shows. I think it's just like, I have so many things going on at one time, I don't remember any of it. You know, it's like input overload.
You're protesting too much now.
So what I'm doing.
I covered for you. Now you're protesting.
I want to tell you my solution. So I'm going to capture everything into Evernote on my Android device, and then I'll sit down at my desktop and go in the web client. They don't have a Linux desktop client, unfortunately.
But the web client is pretty good.
It is. So I'll tag it all. And I've already been doing it for a few days, taking pictures of whiteboards, all this different stuff, all these notes, to see if I can really, even taking pictures of where I park, although I don't usually forget that kind of stuff. I mean, just everything.
Are you really doing that?
Everything. Everything I ever think I'll need to remember, I'm going to store it in Evernote. And then,
how's it been working?
Well, I've only been doing it. When did I start? I started on the 18th.
You should
Wednesday.
Use Evernote to see when you started.
And I know. And I'm going to do a complete report on it on the 30th, Jupiter night on the 30th, Monday the 30th.
Okay.
I'll do my complete results and tell you. Jeremy's also doing it with me because he got himself a little internet phone with Evernote on there, and he's doing a bunch of article research.
That.
And so he's going to do that with Evernote. So we're gonna have a full report on how the whole electronic memory went. But the Android client is really nice. So check it out. It'll be in the show notes, or you can just go to Evernote.com and grab that, because it's a great little Android program.
That sounds awesome. And as someone in the chat room just pointed out, that's totally rad until Evernote goes out of business or gets hacked.
Yeah.
And then maybe not quite as rad.
It's more of a – now, they're not really going to go out of business, but I mean, they have so much freaking money. It's ridiculous. But it's more – because they have – it's free, but there's a lot of people that pay, like myself.
Yeah.
And my idea is
– it's pretty cool.
It's more of a test if that kind of thing is possible.
Right.
Not that I'm not selling myself on the Evernote platform. They've already built it, so now I can try it, and if it works, I might build my own.
Let me ask you this. If you become so reliant on that particular device to remember everything for you, is your brain going to turn to slush by the time you're 40?
See, this is why I didn't want to do it, because it felt like a muscle, right? I should just work it out.
You don't want to be using that thing.
Yeah, but the reality is I'm just not capturing all the stuff I need to remember. So the problem already exists.
Maybe you shouldn't be remembering that much.
Maybe. Though. Yeah. That's probably the real solution.
Or maybe you should be pushing yourself even further.
Maybe.
Then you'll remember everything you currently need to remember, but not the extra
I tried
stuff
taking
that you
like add on. Like I real honest to God memory herbal supplement stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ever try those little like the little Nintendo DS Brain Age kind of games?
You know,
like,
I
teach
haven't.
You how to like
that might not be bad.
How, like, make your brain smarter.
I could just play Simon Says. That'd probably help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
It could probably help.
I'll let everybody know how it goes. Just curious to see if really computers are at that stage. That's really what I want to know.
I would be curious to see that.
With all these mobile devices and stuff, are we really there yet? I'll find out.
Do we want to be there?
I don't know.
Like, is that like our goal? I don't know if we should be saying, are we there yet?
I'm hoping to reflect on it.
It should be more like, has this been pushed upon us yet?
Is this here yet?
Right.
And are we supposed to be using this now?
Yeah.
And I think that's why I wanted to wait till the 30th to do it on Jupiter Nights. That way I could have done it for like a week and a half, 2 weeks to really get a feel if it's crazy.
Yeah, do it a little long term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Brian.
Well, and I just want to say, so we finished up, a little self-plugatory, Illumination Software Creator. We finished up the sale last week. The Android beta came out last week. I'm going to say this.
How'd it go?
Illumination Software Creator, you know, it's been out for a couple months. You know, people have been building Python apps. That's been pretty fun. You know, people have been having a good time. Couple of new open source projects come out of that. That's pretty groovy. We had the Flash and Flex building. People liked that.
Sure.
It helped people to prototype things. But, you know, it was just kind of a handy tool to have in their toolbox.
Okay.
And so we added Android in because we thought, you know what? People are going to enjoy it.
People like Android.
They're going to like Android. Holy God in heaven.
Did that take off?
Like nuts. Oh, crazy
cool.
Balls.
That's good.
So people are building Android apps like nobody's business with Illumination Software Creator.
Really?
And are just going insane with it. And I love it.
That's
nice.
We got
tons of reviews coming up on a bunch of the Android sites over the next week.
Oh, exciting!
I'm absolutely thrilled.
Yeah,
it's going to be tons of fun, tons and tons of fun. So a lot of people have been asking me, what are we adding to it?
What are we doing?
What are we doing with
have you
all
decided?
That? Yeah, hell yeah.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Are you going to tell?
Well, do you guys want to know?
All right, here's the problem.
Here's the problem. So, my name is Brian.
Yeah.
I'm on the Linux Action Show.
The Linux Action Show.
I've been on the Linux Action Show for a long time now.
Yeah.
Probably about 17,000 years.
I think that's how long we've been doing it, yeah.
Now,
124 episodes. That's about the right amount.
I'm making this app to visually build apps, and it's primarily developed on Linux.
Right.
I have an Ubuntu workstation and a SUSE workstation,
nice.
And those are my primary development machines.
That's pretty fancy.
We're very development-centric on the Linux side of things.
Okay.
You know, Python was the first target.
Yeah.
Linux.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Building Flex apps, you can do it on Linux.
Linux.
So that's why we focused on that. We added Android support. It's Linux, man. You can develop it on Linux. Well, so the next one we're adding is iPhone.
Whoa, you're doing that?
Yeah.
Can you do that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right.
And the great thing is, so Illumination, if you don't know how it works, it actually builds the source code of the project files.
Right.
So you're not actually building the app. There's no additional run times for the app. So what we're doing is basically just generating the
Xcode project.
And Xcode project. So the problem, the thing, which is fine, I'm all about supporting every platform known to man. Because like we also have Haiku that should be out of beta here, into beta here
but
shortly.
Boy, yeah, if you can make an Android app and an iPhone app.
But the iPhone app, though, my issue there is you can make it with Illumination on Linux and generate the project.
But you got to use a Mac to create the iPhone.
But then you have
app.
To copy the project over to a Mac.
But if you're making iPhone apps, you're doing
it.
That already.
I know, but you know what I mean. Like I love the fact that you can go with Illumination to any platform. Illumination works great and on Linux and just build anything. You can build anything right on Linux, for Linux, with Linux,
well, that's,
about Linux.
That's
It bothers me a little bit that now we're adding in like Haiku didn't bother me as much. In order to build a Haiku app, you have to copy it over to Haiku.
Right.
But I thought, you know what? Come on, Haiku's so cool.
You're
and
not supporting
and weird.
Vendor locking, but you're not. See, here's the thing. What the problem is develop. It's just the position developers are in for the largest mobile platform because the users. That's not a consideration factor for the users at all. So developers just get stuck working with the situation they've got.
We stuck. And
but people are gonna love being able to build Android and iPhone apps.
My thinking here was. So when it ships, well, we're shipping that with version 2.2.
Okay.
We'll be the only development tool on the planet that will be able to build apps for the iPhone App Store
big.
Other than Apple's Xcode.
Right.
It'll technically be building with Apple's Xcode.
Right, yeah.
I mean, so it's kind of like, and there's actually a news story about Monotouch we'll get into a little bit later, which has some relation. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that.
That's pretty cool.
It's kind of fun. Seriously, though. Android's cooler. But I just want to throw all that out there because I like to.
All right, Brian.
That's all there is to that. Chris.
Let's do the news.
Really? We're going to talk about the news now?
Might as well.
I feel like the show's over. This is all I need to talk about.
Good night, everybody!
And we're out!
Thank you.
What's new in the news this week?
All right, Brian. Our top story on the news docket.
It felt really, like, relaxed to me.
I know.
I liked it.
Yeah, okay. Because I thought, you know, recently, it's pretty amped up.
Let's go smooth.
Right?
The whole rest of the show, if you're driving, I want the show to put you asleep by the time you get to where you're
the
going.
The Linux Mellow Show.
The Linux Relaxation Hour.
Actually, though, see, I didn't really plan very accordingly for this because my first news story is not all that relaxing.
No, it's not.
I gotta be honest with
you. It actually is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. So there has been a critical vulnerability in the Linux kernel since version 2.6 first shipped back in October 8th, 2003, I think?
2003.
Now, here's the funny thing about this. First of all, from the reporting stand side, /.
Stand side?
Well, I don't know. What's that?
Standpoint.
Standpoint. That's what it is.
I like stand side.
Yeah?
No, that's the official. All that's right. The official standpoint of the Linux Action Show is the stand side.
We stand side. We're going to really take a stand side on this. And no, it's the /. These guys, I don't know what they're doing, Brian. They reported on this story twice, and in the second time they reported on it, specifically said it's not related to the first one, and they linked to the description of the problem, which both stories link to the same PDF that describe the problem.
Now, I would like to make a couple of points here. So, okay, so this is a Linux security flaw in the Linux kernel.
Yeah. Been there for a long time.
It's a story, for sure.
Yeah.
It's been there for a long time.
One.
It's nothing new.
It's patched.
And we'll talk about some more details in a second. But I want to talk about /.
Whoa,
for a second here.
All right, lay it on me.
Because, so this story, okay, for a second, it's the second time
that
this story's come up on /.
Yeah. They finally cover Linux news and they cover the same story twice.
The same story twice. Most of the time, they don't cover Linux news anymore. Like, if you read through /, like, and I'm not blaming the editors of /. I'm blaming the editors and the readers of Slashdot because I think it's mostly just Mac users now. If you look through, and it seems like the editors are as well, because most of the editors make comments about when like new Apple hardware OS has come out, they all seem to jump all over it and talk about buying the new Apple mouse or oh my gosh, a slightly revised laptop or whatever, and they get all super excited like this is the end of everything.
Sure.
And
or the beginning.
And when you look in they're like recently submitted stories. You can upvote and downvote them, which kind of you can change their color. Like you can make them purple or blue or red or whatever.
I like changing colors.
Slashdot has kind of a weird rating system.
I do like changing colors.
So the goal of every Slashdot story is to get red. You want to be a red color.
Oh, okay.
That way you go to the front page and everyone sees you. Now, if you submit a Linux story, literally, if it's a Linux story that's as big as, Fedora X20 ships with the ability to run 1 million processors in tandem. Big news story. Something like that will come up. It will immediately be downvoted into the lowest possible color segment, which apparently is like blue or something because they hate the color blue.
Oh, that's too bad. I like blue.
And siphoned right off.
Seems like red would be the direction you would
want to go. Excuse me. I am allergic to how upset this makes me. I'm allergic to Slashdot right now. So we submitted a news story. One of our readers submitted a news story that we had covered some time ago about OpenSUSE. OpenSUSE did a lot of cool stuff. They released the SUSE Gallery and SUSE Studio.
Right.
Honestly, if you're a nerdy website, that's news.
Okay.
It's news.
I agree.
That same day, on Slashdot was a story about it was the Magic Trackpad. That's right.
Yeah.
It was the Apple released a slightly new mouse that didn't look all that good. That one had like a billion comments and voted right through the roof.
So,
and immediately they essentially voted it all the way down for the Linux story and then deleted it.
SUSE makes a build service that lets any distro build packages for multiple destinations and multiple platforms.
Huge. Huge for open source.
Totally huge
for
open source. Huge for Linux. Apple releases a trackpad. Trackpad gets coverage. I agree.
It's ridiculous.
It does seem to be going in that direction.
You know, the really crazy thing is, though, Slashdot also doesn't have the power it once had. Slashdot was, you remember, things used to get slashdotted. I mean, if you get a website
that
got posted to Slashdot, their website was down. And that was just a standard thing that happened. People were used to.
Maybe it wasn't Slashdot had more traffic. Maybe web servers just sucked more.
I don't think so. I've got. The traffic, if you watch it, so I've had stories on the front page of Slashdot over the last year,
and it's
or two.
Just not sending as much traffic.
No, I'll get more traffic from some Linux news sites or from Dig or from any of these other random sites. Slashdot, I get a little uptick, a couple thousand people come.
There you go.
That's about it. So I'm just saying this, Slashdot, your migration towards being a Mac website that you've done, whether you know it or not, it's not working. Go back the other way, where you can actually start having traffic again. I'm just saying Slashdot and Slashdot's parent company, whatever the heck you are, like you're important, walking around like you're all fancy and important.
Yeah.
Fix yourself.
There you go.
Get back on the bandwagon.
Get your stuff together.
Get your act together and start covering news that nerds care about. We don't want to hear about the stupid Apple mouse. All right, now continue about what's going on with Linux, because this is the Linux Action Show, and we actually cover nerd news here.
We're going to do this stuff. So this vulnerability basically allowed an application running, say, any GUI application or something like this, to, without the proper authorization, escalate itself to root-level privileges.
Ooh.
And it was...
That's a nasty one.
In the conceptual demonstration they did, they took advantage of something through Xorg. It wasn't actually a flaw in Xorg.
No.
But it was a flaw in the kernel that let it happen. It was apparently a memory management issue. Essentially, I think it's kind of an old-school... buffer overrun kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't look like it was that much of a weird, like, undiscovered type of vulnerability.
No,
they say here that also, which is kind of funny, a SUSE maintainer named Andrea Archangel provided the fix back in September of 2004, so a year after it was out.
6 years ago.
Interestingly enough, SUSE itself has had the fix in SUSE Linux Enterprise 9, 10, and 11, and as well as OpenSUSE 11.1 through 11.3, so they are not vulnerable because they said, well, all right, if they're not going to apply the patch, we'll apply the patch.
I completely get that. I got to agree with the SUSE guys on that.
I know, they
got
to protect their own.
They've got the freaking patch, why not?
My understanding is, I don't know if it was the original patch they submitted or if Linus has a newer patch, but now everything's been patched in the latest kernels.
Well, that's good.
But so you might see an update for your Linux distro kernel coming pretty soon. That'd probably be a good one to get, because another It was funny. You know, one of the ways they were hacking the iPhone was through a PDF exploit.
Yeah.
Essentially, it was the same exact thing as somebody was able to, even in a sandboxed PDF reader, execute the exploit and get root level access.
Man.
Using a PDF flaw. So,
PDF.
I don't know. PDF, I don't know why document readers all of a sudden have to be able to destroy our universe. But,
seriously, what? I just want to read a freaking file. I just want to read a book. How is it that reading a book is so dangerous? This isn't 1984, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to take down the government because I had an idea in a book. Well, maybe I will. I don't know. But this is ridiculous.
Maybe
this
you
is
will.
The stupidest
Brian.
Thing. Just take scripting languages out of the document reader. It shouldn't have a scripting language in there. What on earth? Have you ever made a PDF? Yeah. That had to be interactive?
No. I mean, a checkbox maybe? Is that require scripting?
No, it doesn't require scripting. It's just an on-off deal.
There you go.
But why?
Yeah.
Why on God's green earth would you want that functionality? I have yet to see anyone use it.
Oh, I have. It's the hackers.
It's the hackers. That's it. So exactly. Why make it? Adobe, just pull it out. Like, don't even stop. Don't even stop and think, well, we'll upset three people. Just pull the friggin' thing out.
Yeah,
just get rid of it completely. Pull it out of the standard. Be done with
it. That would sure solve a lot of problems.
What's the big deal with that?
Now, let's talk about something that
if anyone listening to the show
this was going to be mellow.
Actually used scripting in a PDF file? Yeah, let me know. And let me know what actual benefit
that
has.
Why the heck you would need to ever do that?
Yeah, because I want to know. I have never heard anything like this. Just yank that the heck out.
Yeah.
Could it
be anything so important that we all have to be subjected to these freaking...
Seriously, and if you need something to be interactive, here's an idea. Build a website. Make an application. Something.
You got some people in the chat room that are claiming. They're claiming they've done it with forms. They need it with forms. But, you know, again, a
website. Webpage. Come on, guys. Come on.
Now let's talk about something that is a little feel-good, happy-go-lucky.
I like that better.
We've seen some tease shots, some leaked shots of the new Nokia N9, which is supposedly going to be a new hardware MeeGo device.
It looks like a MacBook Pro.
It does look like a MacBook Pro. I'll be honest with you. I found also that if you're watching the video version, you get a little extra treat here because these pictures might get pulled. I found some extra pictures of the device, and it's looking pretty good, though.
Yeah, if this just says redacted over the video display, that means we got a phone call.
Yeah. I don't like the connector they chose to use. I wish it was a standard USB mini port, but maybe that'll get changed on the final
version. That looks like a new type of connector, too. That's not the standard N900 or
N810
connector.
Huh? Like an AV. Yeah. And then here's a nice shot of it with the screen on, and you can see the little MeeGo applications button there. And we also got some shots of the back with the removable battery, and it looks like a nice large
camera.
Nice
big camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they've done a pretty good job. Nokia's been really getting behind putting the nice cameras into their phones. Yeah. Like, I mean, they've got what's that one phone?
The N95?
N95
big 8-megapixel where like the top part of it.
Yeah, they have all the video online of the HD video they shot with it, and it just looks gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh, that new one. Yeah, yeah.
The new one
that's
coming out.
That's not.
So I mean, Nokia's really big into throwing the nice cameras in there.
I would not mind carrying around a little device that looks like this. I could do without the MacBook Pro aesthetic, but I'm getting more and more excited about MeeGo, that's for sure.
MeeGo as a system, I'm excited about. And honestly, the MacBook Pro aesthetic, the fact that it's, you know, got the aluminum with the chiclet keyboard, that's fine. I'll get over that. I think it works better in a handheld than it does in a laptop. Just because the chiclet keyboards I don't really like on laptops.
But for thumb
typing, it works okay. So I'll forgive that just fine, but I'd prefer it in black, but whatever. But the MeeGo system, I like to see new systems actually shipping with MeeGo. So that's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, and we're going to see, you know, all other hardware manufacturers coming up. But, you know, of course, Nokia for a little while is going to be the premier hardware maker for this.
And it's really interesting. We got a video going right now, and it's showing the Ovi Store running on the MeeGo side of things.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've improved the Ovi Store significantly.
The UI is nice.
Yeah, it looks nicer than the Android marketplace does right now. It's about on par with the iPhone App Store.
I don't know if you noticed, but inside their applications menu, when you got to the bottom list of all your installed applications, there's a little button that says add more applications.
Yeah.
Right to the store. I like that.
Nice and simple. They did a really nice job on it. It's looking better and better. And I just, do we have a release date?
No. That's all leaked stuff. But if you read the article here, I'll link to it in show notes for Engadget. They're insinuating a December timeline release.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that's a lot closer.
Well, you know, they hinted that we'd have devices by the end of the year.
Yeah.
When they first announced MeeGo, the MeeGo, you know, MAMO Moblin merger back in January,
hardware. And that seemed like so far away. Remember when they said, I was like, oh, that's just, you know.
But now we're looking like what, 3 months? Four months?
Yeah. You know, I'm worried though because I think I'm still worried about Mego, dude, because Android 3.0, I really believe, I don't think there's been any firm details yet. I think Android 3.0 is going to be all about unifying, coming up with Android's version of DirectX. Because they desperately need to get their butt in shape with
really
video
do.
Gaming.
They
and
really
Windows
do.
Mobile 7 is going to be crazy with the games.
Dude.
It's going to be, the games they're showing already are going to be crazy. They're going to integrate in with Xbox Live. I mean, people that want a game are going to go with Windows Mobile 7.
You know what makes me angry? How nice that looks.
Well, I would like to see Mego kind of get something together with the open 3D acceleration stuff. I mean,
we're gamers. I mean,
yeah.
we play games.
But I don't need to have the vast gaming library, but just some games.
I need some great games. Like, I mean, on my NA10 tablet, you know, I've got like Heroes of Might and Magic 2, and I've got some great games on here. You know, Free Civilization and everything else, and I love that. I do, but you know, to have a phone in my hand or a device, a tablet that has some cool gaming experiences
right.
that tie into like either my PS3 or my Xbox Live.
I like the syncing with the friends and stuff.
Syncing with my friends, syncing with my gamer score, syncing with my achievements, syncing with everything.
I would like it.
It's cool.
It is cool.
And
I would
and
like
the
it.
Way they
I'd
did
like to
it
see
looks
Mego do
so
something.
Nice.
I'd like to see. I think Mego needs to. I think Android's going to. Apple's working on Game Center.
You know,
they got
to
do it.
Here's what I keep coming back to. I love Mamo. I like Mego a ton, and honestly, I think it's gonna grow to that love point where I'm gonna ask it to move in with me,
sure.
And like we'll share a bedroom,
right?
But you know, like maybe some of her stuff will still be in storage,
in
case it doesn't work out. We
can
make a quick exit.
You're gonna bring
but
essentials,
like, but like we're getting to that point,
right?
I really like
so
Mego.
Same bed.
Okay, dude. Come on.
Yeah, all right.
I would sleep in the same bed with Mego.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Even now,
but here's a problem I have. I keep looking at it from a nerd point of view, I love what I can do with Mego. So flexible.
Sure.
Running Linux, I can change the crud out of change the way it looks and works.
Awesome. I like that.
Then I look over across the pod. You know, Android is cool. Android's awesome. You can do quite a bit with Android.
There's some
great apps coming out. So that's also interesting. I look over at iPhones and, well, I'm not going to buy one. But then I look over at Windows Phone 7 and I think, this thing's not even shipping. It has a stupid name. But then I look at two of the things it's got. One, it's got that Xbox Live game thing with those cool games.
Right,
and
right
out of the gate, high definition Netflix Watch Now streaming.
That is cool.
Over 3G.
But do you need that on your phone?
I don't know if I need it or not, but
you
dang
like
it, that
it.
Sounds cool.
You like having
and
it, yeah.
I just, I that's something
that
I
is cool.
I want.
And the Netflix library is getting so good.
It's
I
getting
wish,
so big.
I, you know, the thing is, I believe when Netflix streams to the iPhone,
okay,
iPad,
I should say this straight up. I don't believe the high def is over 3G. I think you have to be connected to Wi-Fi and have a certain device for
still,
high def, but you can still stream the video
all those
over
streams,
3G.
Though, which drives me crazy.
That's
like,
what I've heard anyway.
Like the stream to the Roku, the stream to the Xbox, the stream to the TiVo, the stream to the Apple devices
so cool.
is all H.264. Why can't they enable that same stream?
I know.
You know, why can't they do that for Linux? Why do they have to, on the desktop, stick to Silverlight? Also, worth noting,
I hear you.
Totally unrelated, but I've been told, and I don't have a way to test this, but if you have like an iPad or an iPhone, or if you can change your browser into an iPhone browser, if you can make your browser ID show up as an iPhone device,
sure.
I'm told that if you go to jupiterbroadcasting.com/live, Ustream will detect that it's an iDevice, and it will swap out the live stream player to an HTML5 player. So if you want to watch
really?
The Linux Action Show live without Flash, that might be a way to do it.
I'd never heard that.
I don't have a way to test it. Actually, you know what? I'll grab my wife's iPhone and try it. See if that works.
I'd be curious.
That might work.
That'd be cool. So I look at that and I...
You're worried that maybe Mego isn't offering enough across the board to compete with whatever else
I'm looking at that, and realistically, I mean, come on, we're not going to get iPhones. I mean, why would anyone buy an iPhone at this day and age? I mean, yeah, they came out with Retina display screens, but that actually was just a screen with the resolution that Nokia tablets have had for years.
I guess
so. That wasn't anything new.
It depends. Well, if you're in the Apple ecosystem, and you have like all your music locked up, all your videos.
People are getting out of that. People are
but
leaving.
It does seem like it does. But okay.
But Android has all these apps. It's got this great stuff. Why? Like how are we going to convince people that you want to go over to Mego?
There's got to be something there to make people want to switch.
I love it. I think it's awesome. I mean, it does have more performance. You are going to have faster
applications. But you're not going to see, it's going to be like the OV store is now. You're not going to see this huge mass adoption from developers because right now,
yeah,
they probably are feeling a little fatigued from going from, a lot of them have been focused primarily on iPhone. I think a lot of them are retooling to refocus their primary development for Android. And by the time Migo hits in December, they're going to go, well, I'm just getting rolling on Android now.
Right.
And they're going to look at that and go, well, this is selling 5 million devices a month.
Right.
I'm going to stick here.
Androids
for now.
On top, and then you've got, you know, iPhones and Blackberries, and hell, WebOS is still selling significant amounts of devices.
And then Windows Mobile 7.
And then Migo.
Now, Migo is going to be boosted by the open source community, and we're going to know that, and we're going to think that's awesome.
Like you know, I look at
it from
the super nerd point of view, like Illumination Software Creator. We're absolutely, as soon as there's a Migo device shipping, we'll support building apps for it. But that's because we're so nerdy.
That's because
of who we are. But we're a really weird niche. We're not the average game developer. We're not EA Sports.
Right.
Those people I just don't see coming over to Migo, which does make me sad. But then I realize that's not going to make a difference. I'm going to get a Migo phone anyway.
That's true.
I mean, most likely.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just would like to mention that.
All right, I have got two more stories. One quick one that we wanted to bring up because it's come up in the chat room a few times during the live stream, so we thought we'd cover it. There was kind of an unofficial, we're not working on this, from Steam folks for the Linux client.
Yeah.
But now we've got an official from a Steam representative. They were asked one final question. I'm sure you guys are not super keen to answer this, but I was wondering, are you really working on a Linux version of Steam? Because that would be pretty epic, right?
Oh, yeah. And we've had hints. And we've had screenshots that were theoretically leaked and everything else that looked pretty legit.
Yep. Doug Lombardi from Valve says, there's no Linux version that we're working on right now. And that kind of confirms some other things we'd say where there's no plan. Somebody else said there's no plans.
We don't have it.
I think for right now, we're just going to have to accept that we're probably not going to see Steam for a little while. If they come out and say they're not working on it, they're not working on it, right?
You know what? That makes me sad.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know,
but you know what? I say it goes like this, Brian. The last story on the news docket is Google Video Chat is now available for Linux. Tons of people excited about this. In my opinion, I feel like we've already solved this problem,
and I think
we'll solve the Steam problem too.
Yeah, you know what? Like the Steam thing, you know, I feel like the game issues on Linux really get resolved by what happened with the Humble Indie Bundle.
Yeah, yep.
We got a lot of great press for Linux gaming.
It might not be the same method of Steam,
and we showed that Linux was a viable gaming platform.
Yeah.
In fact, more viable than the Macintosh platform for bringing games to it. So now Windows developers are looking at that and thinking, I want to make some money. This is viable.
Sure.
These people are rabid fanatics and are willing to pay more money.
And they want to show that.
And now the bad side is, I bet you anything, we're going to start getting some more Windows ports, but they're going to upcharge it. Because we proved that we were willing to spend more than Windows users to get games.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it's just because we're more desperate, but we proved that. So,
well, we're trying to vote with our money.
But that's good.
Yeah.
So that means that more games are coming.
Yeah.
But now, Google Video Chat, I mean, that's great.
It is cool. I guess there was
great.
A lot of.
I like more features. I like to have cross compatibility with my apps. I did not like that it was not available.
It's
for
a
Linux.
Large install base that now you're going to be able to video chat with. That's great. And they claim that they did a lot of work to make it work well with Pulse Audio and all that kind of stuff.
I dig that.
It's definitely a good. It's a good thing. But it's interesting that when these companies come out with a product, if they're not fast with the Linux support. We just come up with Ikigia, we come up with Skype. Well, no, we didn't come up with Skype, but we use Skype.
We just come up
with different solutions.
We already solved it.
We'll move past you. If you don't want to play with in our playground.
And here's the thing.
We'll still have a game.
Google Video Chat's been around for years.
2 years, yeah.
And they just kind of forgot about it. I think as far as I could tell, Google forgot it existed, and I just assumed they were about to ditch Google Chat entirely because it kind of just went the way of the dodo.
People in my BuzzFeed, I pre-vet all of these stories in my BuzzFeed, and a lot of this one was the number one commented on story in my BuzzFeed, and a lot of people were suggesting perhaps it's a prelude to Google Video Chat on the Android phones.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That could be cool.
Yeah, see, I
think they did
that.
Some back-end stuff, too, on the server side.
That's what I look at. I'm like, you know what? I can do Skype video chat across, 20 different platforms.
Well, and you look at, these Android phones now. The new ones are shipping with forward-facing cameras. But what are you your options are Fring and Quick, and they suck.
Yeah, they do.
But if I could Google Voice, especially, what we really need is somebody to make these phones with cameras on them I want to be able to call somebody sitting in a desktop.
Now, with Skype, you can do it on Nokia's phones, like the N900.
And you could Skype somebody who's on a Skype full desktop.
On Linux or Windows or whatever, and you have full video back and forth.
Skype locks that down on Android. They don't even have the option for video support. Now, Fring will let you do it, but you have to call another Fring person because Skype locked that down.
Yep.
So
maybe this will be great.
Yeah. If they get the Android component and I can Android from Android to Android or Android to desktop or desktop to Android.
The only part that annoys me is now to do video chat with everybody, I'm going to have like three clients open at all times just to chat with each individual person.
I do.
Come on, guys.
But you're already using,
I'm already doing that anyway. Yeah.
I hear you, Brian.
But see, for the video talk side, for like Google Talk, I'm using like Pigeon or Epiphany or something like that. Yeah. So do I really want to... Or empathy. Do I really want to switch over to using a dedicated Google Talk client?
But I should tune in next week because we're going to take video calls for Google Talk. No, I'm kidding.
No, we're not.
No, we're not doing that.
Though we could. And that would be awesome because it's shipping on Linux.
We can now.
So thanks, Google. I guess I'm being too hard on them.
Yeah.
You know
it's
what?
A good thing to have.
You know what? It's a good thing
we're
to have.
We're just a little bitter it took so long.
Seriously? All right. Yeah. My bitterness is gone.
Yeah.
I've got it out of my
it's
system.
There now.
Thank you,
water
Google.
Under the bridge.
Thanks for doing the right thing. Thanks for getting it out there. I'm 100% behind you now.
At least this issue.
Yeah. Now do it better elsewhere also. and make a Picasa that's native on Linux. What are
no
you doing?
No kidding. All right, Brian. That's all the news for this week.
Hey, Chris, you know what's important?
Backups.
That's right, sir.
Should we talk about some backups?
Let's talk about backups for a little while. We talked about servers a lot over the last two episodes.
Yeah.
Making your own home server. But once you got your own home server, you got to take that file. So all those files that are on your system, and you want to put it on your server. Of course, you don't want to sit around and drag and drop manually all day, because you know who does that?
Idiots.
Dumb monkeys.
Probably.
Dumb monkeys.
I thought, there's a lot of different ways to back up your Linux machine, including just, using tar on the command line and stuff like that. But.
Whoa. Seriously? Tar on the command line?
I know.
Sit down and like.
Crazy.
I would like to back up my computer right now. Tar dash. I'm like, no, you don't
tar
up
your
machine.
Like it. It's not so much that it doesn't work, because a lot of these use tar on the back end and stuff like that, but I like having a nice UI.
Some intelligence behind it, though.
I want to have some organization, some data to know where, which files are where and whatnot. So I looked at a few different ones, and you and I have got a couple of favorites we've covered over the years, and we'll throw those in.
Oh, yeah.
This first one, though, FW Backups. It's a feature-rich backup system. Looks really nice. It's free. I'm gathering it might be... maybe from a proprietary solution. This is the open source side of it. But it's got a really nice UI. In fact, I think out of everything we're going to talk about here, it probably has my favoriteest UI.
It's not bad.
It's got...
Let me pull some up here. You can see it. It's nice looking. It's very minimalist, but it's easy to figure out.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's got probably what I would consider to be... the widest platform support, too. Like, it has a Windows client, a Mac client, and a Linux client. Supports network backups. Supposedly even do some one-time imaging backups and stuff like that.
Though, what makes me very happy, if you go and check out the screenshots on their website, the screenshots are all Linux.
Yes, they are. They are all Linux. And that's cool. Now, the...
I like that.
I've not used FW Backups, but it came very highly recommended in my BuzzFeed, and I was checking it out, and it did seem pretty impressive. Plus, I like their Restore UI, which has always been, when I'm trying to, or their Log UI too, when I'm trying to check out what's been going on, I want a nice, consistent, easy to read something that's, if I'm kind of panicked, like I just lost all of the baby's pictures,
Yeah.
I don't want to have to be like trying to decipher what it's telling me. So I like FW Backups for that.
Yeah. If you lost all the baby pictures, you want it to just tell you, your wife hates you now.
Yeah. You're divorced.
a backup software should just auto-divorce you.
Yeah. Here's the papers. I've sent them to your printer. Now, the one we've talked about probably the most on Linux Action Show over the years is Mondo Rescue.
Mondo Rescue. And the cool thing about Mondo Rescue is its UI.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's all
sir.
N-curses.
I am a big fan of text-based N-curses UI. I know I like things blingy. I know I like them shiny in 3D, but come on.
Yeah.
There's something glorious there about is. Just antsy and
if you're not going to go blingy, you got to go ASCII.
Go retro. If you go full-on retro, you're cool.
Do it.
But, like, here's the thing. You've seen applications that are, like, GTK1 based,
yeah.
and they're just super ugly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
So those are the applications that everyone makes fun of.
Right.
If you go all the way back and you go N-curses and fully terminal, then people think you're just super cool and smart and retro.
And I would say this,
so, hey,
too.
That works.
I would say this. Don't be scared off by the UI, because it's actually still under very active development. I should make a disclaimer that I was looking into some rather popular highly recommended Linux backup tools,
yep.
and was sad to discover that their actual development has been discontinued. Mondo Rescue, though, just had a release recently.
Yeah, it's going strong.
It looks old school, but here's what's cool about Mondo Rescue is you can install it on your running system, kick off a backup, and it will produce either an image file or, my preferred solution, it'll burn DVDs right there inside the application, a complete restore DVD, right? Nice. So it's total restore, and if you do this, now you could either do this with something like FW Backup to get the files, and then this would be a whole image of all your applications and everything like that.
Yep.
And if your hard drive were to pop at one point and just totally lose everything, you could throw a new hard drive in your box.
if your hard drive were to pop.
That's what they say.
That's what happens with hard drives. They pop. Prime,
yeah. They get hot and pop.
they're like popcorn.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you throw your DVD in, and it could be multiple DVDs or a single DVD, and restore right from the bare metal.
It's really nice.
And you use this in conjunction with something like Dropbox. Say you put all of your really important stuff in Dropbox, your frequently asked documents and your frequently accessed photos, put all those in Dropbox, then you could just do this bare metal restore, and then Dropbox would just sync everything back.
So cool.
So I like Mondo Rescue.
So cool.
Check that out. We've used that for years, recommended it in tons of shows, so that's a good one. Now, the next one on my list for home backup machines is, I had to get this out there because there's a lot of people that recommended Flyback and Wayback and a few other Time Vault knockoff type things, you know, the Apple Time Vault.
I haven't really cared for most of those.
No. I like the concept, right? Give me multiple revisions of my files. Okay, all right. I like that.
That's awesome.
That's cool. The problem is a lot of these are dead. In fact, the only one out of all of these that I could actually find under active development is Back in Time.
What is the deal with that? It's like people saw it and are like, oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Started a project and immediately abandoned it.
You know, I think maybe with these types of file revision tools, maybe people look at it and go, well, you know, ButterFS is going to have this ability, so maybe I'll just stop
not worry about
this.
It, yeah.
But, you know, we need something now.
We need something now.
And not everybody's going to be switching to ButterFS right
seriously.
Away.
Seriously.
So this guy gives you multiple snapshots throughout a day. You can get the revisions, restore them. It doesn't do that stupid, crazy travel through time UI, which on Apple's Time Machine, which, by the way,
is horrible,
requires 3D acceleration. And if you're on an old Mac that doesn't have 3D acceleration, like it doesn't support open, what do they call it, Quartz Extreme?
Oh, yeah.
You can't restore your files.
Wait, no, you...
I S you not, you cannot
dude,
get
no,
in...
No, there's got to be a 2D interface to it.
Yeah, there's a third-party one that you can go pay $25 for off of some Mac shareware site.
Are you joking with me?
I am not kidding at all. I got down to my mom's house, needed to restore some of her graphic art files that she'd been working on. And her old G4 Power Mac doesn't support Quartz Extreme. No dice. I had to go buy an app to do it.
You had to go buy an
ridiculous.
App.
So I don't mind that this is not flying through space, that it is just a 2D standard GTK application. I'm okay with that. And it uses cool stuff on the back end. It's inspired from Flyback. The Flyback project, I think, is where it got most of its code.
Yeah.
It is a GUI, but the real magic is done by rsync and diff and CP to make hard links and
all those
kind
tools
of stuff.
That have been around forever and we know work.
Yeah, they're great, solid tools. So even if, for some reason, the developer were just to discontinue the GUI front end, it's just using these tools with cron to schedule and get this stuff done. So this GUI, you could actually uninstall the GUI theoretically, leave all the stuff it sets up in place, and you're good to go. So I like Back in Time for just your own personal. Also, if you work on documents and spreadsheets and stuff, and you want to be able to recover from a previous version, Back in Time is not a good, not a bad way to go. Plus, those tools, super low resource usage.
I got to admit, I like this. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I like Back in Time quite a bit. Now, maybe you want to go a little more serious. Maybe you got a home server and you want to back up all the computers on your home network. There's a lot of options. I'll give an honorable mention to Bakula, but the one I really like is Backup PC. And this is the one I've used for years. And it's actually...
And it is the nerdiest looking of the bunch.
It's super nerdy.
Check out these screenshots, guys. You got to go to backuppc.sourceforge.net.
Yeah.
You can check it out. It's
all text.
These are screenshots of the actual project.
Yeah.
It is insanity.
And I'll be honest, the primary configuration is done through config files, but they are the easiest config files you'll ever read. They're well commented, very well done.
Okay.
And the defaults are often very acceptable. Backup PC will connect over your network via multiple different types of connection, SSH, Samba, NFS.
Cool. And so when you transfer things around, you can set specific wildcards to only grab certain apps that match.
And this happens to me too. It does hashes on all the files, and it knows that, okay, well, the Ubuntu 8.10 desktop ISO was on this computer and this computer. I don't need to back it up from both computers. I back it up from one computer, and then the backup for the other one, I just make a hard symlink. So I could do a restore, and so I only back up large ISO files only once. In fact, it has great, amazing, fantastic deduplication logic, so that way you're not backing up multiple revisions. I backed up 115 servers with a grand total. Now, this was about 4 or 5 years ago, so it wasn't a lot of storage. It was probably 3 terabyte total on all these servers.
Sure.
But the backup between the data duplication removal and the advanced compression backup PC uses, I would say the entire backup archive probably took 300 gigabytes.
That ain't bad.
No, and now the only downside is the backups are not human readable and browsable because they're all a bunch of symlinks and hard links. So you got to use their web interface to restore files or their command line interface, but it's really good. It's really quick, low impact.
That ain't bad.
It's quite nice.
That is not bad at all.
Yeah, I like it quite a bit. So check out Backup PC if you want to back up all of the machines on your network or just one of your computers. And then I put a couple of links in there too, you guys. I know I want to give a shout out. Somebody in our chat room this morning during the pre-show, I had all the lights off still. You know, we're getting out here. Brian just showed up. We were just getting set up, and somebody was in there, and his hard drive had died. I kid you not. We just did a, like, we had a server failure. You know, the Linux Action, the JupiterBroadcasting.com server was up for like 460 days.
That's mega.
And then it, like, just kind of crapped out the other night on us. So we got a little scared.
It took a poop.
Yeah, it took a poop.
It kind of, we were like, it's responding.
Can you get to the server, Brian?
Yeah, so I ping it, and initially I'm like, no, ping time's actually really good right now. It's better than normal.
And
Chris is like, try that again. And so I'm like, okay, go to the website. Oh my god,
it's not loading.
Oh my god, I tried to SSH into it. Oh my god,
and we're worried. It's an old server, so this really got the data protection on our mind. So I did a whole kind of like rundown on what happened with our server crash on Jupiter Night one of these nights. Not kidding. One of the guys in the live stream during the show, his hard drive crashed.
No way.
No kidding. So he came back in this morning. He was like, hey, by the way, I had to recover some of my data, and I used these two open source tools to do it. And so I put them in the show notes. I haven't used them myself, but that's what this guy used. It's called DD Rescue. You might recognize the DD part.
Yep.
And it's essentially DD on steroids, and it will go to these bad sectors or bad parts of the drives and just go at it like a crazy man. And just keep
pull
reading,
out
keep
files reading. Off of it. Yeah.
Every bit of data it gets then saves it to a good sector. It's a little hard to use, though, so I've also included DDR Help, which is like a bash script that wraps around it. I've also personally used Steve Gibson's spin rate to recover my data, you know, from GRC. All of these recovery tools, if you're dealing with drive failures, you might need to wait. Like, if your drive's really screwed up,
it takes a while.
Like 3-4 days sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nuts.
No, they're not easy.
But so try to use these backup tips first so you don't have to rely on one of those
tools. Almost all those tools scare the bejesus out of me.
Yeah. Like, well, you kind of like the back in time one.
Like, back in time is different, but like DD Rescue and like Steve Gibson's tools.
Right. They're
like,
too intense.
You put them on there and you're like, okay, I'm pretty sure I just lost something really important.
Though,
my drive is down. My system is dead. Okay, put it in there. And the drive will just start crunching.
You know what's crazy?
Wildly.
Gibson put
for
in some
a long time.
You would love this because Gibson put in some really, really great ASCII animations and stuff while it's doing stuff. And I ran it on our studio machine just to keep the drives in good health on that 30-inch screen. Those DOS ASCII animations are breathtaking.
Are they really?
They're amazing. And it's like I just want to get like a wall full of them and computers so I can scan all of my hard drives and have this awesome, awesome animation.
What is happening?
I don't know.
The last two episodes, didn't we talk about like the ASCII aquarium
or
the ASCII
more retro
screensaver?
Things are going more retro, and I've been talking to other people. They're going more retro too.
First season,
it seems to be
the
a
first
thing.
Year of the Linux Action Show, we were like, come on, Ubuntu, what are you doing?
First
Compass.
2 years, we were like,
go to Barrel, go to Compass, 3D effects, what are you doing? And now we're like, you know what? What I really like is ASCII art.
Yeah.
If we could have more ASCII art, hell, with the aquarium thing last week, you were even getting a little annoyed. You're like, well, is this real ASCII art?
It better not be vector art.
Yeah. No, they better not be drawing it to look like ASCII art. I want it to be real ASCII terminal art, I'm not interested. Yeah. I'm out.
You know, it's like, I think as all of this stuff has gotten fancier and better and the promises just haven't been delivered on year after year, I start to go, well, you know what?
Things used
to work. This stuff already worked. Well, let's just stick with it. Why change it? Because you guys aren't delivering on what you promised.
Exactly.
Just across the board.
Exactly.
Technology in general. It's awesome in a lot of ways, but it's also just not...
It's not there.
Yeah. You know, it's too hot. It uses too much battery, too much power. et cetera.
You know, I come back to this fairly often. If you look back in like the late 80s through like the mid 90s, there were some things that had that existed back then, devices and OSs.
Dude, I was running the Computer Chronicles before we went live on Linux Action Show, and they were talking about the video toaster. They were talking about there was an Amiga episode on there, all this different stuff that they were doing back then that I'm like,
great systems.
It's, so much of it is still the bare essentials of what we do now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. Well, that was 20 years ago that they're showing this. So
20 years ago, where have we come? Or look at this. People come out with a new tablet or a new netbook, and they're like, can you believe this? Gets 8 hours of battery life. And everyone looks around and goes, no S? 8 hours?
8 hours of battery
life.
Holy
moly. What do you need that for? Back in the 90s, Apple released a Newton message pad called the eMate 300. That was it was a netbook, basically. It was roughly the size of a netbook. You flip it open. 28 hours on a single recharge.
That's pretty nuts.
Took about 9 hours to recharge.
Dude, the old processors didn't even need to have a heatsink.
Dude.
You know, then they eventually got a heatsink. They didn't need a fan. And
yeah.
Then,
28 hours,
you know,
though.
It's funny because we're sitting here dogging on it, but then, of course, this has got to be one of the latest state-of-the-art.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
So, you want to talk about that?
Let's talk about this briefly. So this is the Lenovo S10 3T IdeaPad netbook netvertible tablet. So basically its screen swivels and it turns into a tablet.
It's got the nice new Atom processor in there. Good keyboard.
Yep, good keyboard,
and
good
you
everything.
You put the extended battery on there.
I did. If you've seen the video version, you'll notice there's this big battery dangling off the back of it.
Which
acts as a really nice handle. But we'll talk about that next week. I've thrown SUSE and Ubuntu on here.
Touchscreen.
It's a capacitive multi-touch touchscreen. It's beautiful, gorgeous screen. Great battery life. So it's basically a nice
Lenovo.
It's a Lenovo. It has great build quality. So I'm going to talk about this next week. So basically, if you want to have a Linux tablet, this right now is the option.
What I love about this is it's tablet, but
it's also a netbook.
It's also a netbook with probably. I mean, I've used it, 15 minutes? But it's got to be one of the best keyboards I've ever seen on a netbook. You get touchscreen, you flip it around, you got keyboard.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. So, yeah, we'll talk about that guy in the next episode.
It's great. It's got a good cost. So you spend less than an iPad or something like that, and you can run whatever OS you want.
I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm excited to hear the review.
We'll talk about it next week. To go along with it, since installing Linux ain't too super simple, I'm going to be posting over on linduke.com. Installation steps on how to get touchscreen and everything else working under Ubuntu
People
and SUSE, so you can actually follow along.
All right, Brian. Well, that's the Linux Action Show's look at Linux backup.
Oh, that's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So we weren't talking about ASCII art and tablets.
No, we should say, too, we'd like to hear what you guys do for your backups. Maybe you've got a cool solution. JupiterColony.com. There's a section there for Linux Action Show, and let us know what you use, or just the comments wherever you watch this. Share your backup solution.
Yes, sir. And I do believe that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast of the Linux Action Show. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. So next week, we got the Lenovo S10 3T tablet review. We're going to be talking about that with both Ubuntu and OpenSUSE dual booting on here. Actually,
like
try booting with Windows 7 because why not, right?
You know what?
The thing comes with Windows 7.
I want to try boot my tablet. That could be the ultimate Linux tablet. And Lenovo's got a good Linux history, so I'm curious to see how that turns
out. Right now, I'm going to just a little sneak peek for you guys. It's probably the favorite machine I've ever touched. So
makes your pants a little tight,
but
though, Brian.
Haven't had it for that long.
So we'll
what
see.
Will happen in a week?
Who knows?
Maybe I'll hate it.
Everything
we
could
don't
change.
Know. Brian is a fickle beast, is what we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen.
All it would take is for Lenovo to announce a partnership to ship iPods with every Lenovo device from then on. And then you'd hate
Seriously,
it.
I would drop kick it through my plate glass window.
No, Brian, that window's old. Don't break it over that. Throw it out the door.
Just throw it out the door. That's true. I love that window.
Yeah.
It's a 100-year-old window. And
they don't want to break it over that.
I don't want to break that.
Yeah.
So we got that coming up next week. We have something else coming next week, don't we?
We did. We talked about it just before we
just
hit
like
record.
A few minutes ago.
I totally blanked
we were mentioning.
Oh, we were going to mention the Lunduke files, Brian, the Jupiter files.
Yes.
Jupiter files coming back Monday.
So the Jupiter files comes back tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. So that's exciting. So, you know, you want to talk about aliens and such, just head over to jupiterbroadcasting.com/live.
That's pretty awesome. We're
going
to be back to two daily shows.
Two of them.
Crazy.
What time is Jupiter night?
9 p.m.
So those are Pacific times, 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. And of course, Linux Action Show every Sunday, 10 a.m. Pacific time is when we record that.
I want to say thanks. You know, it's Sunday morning, you know, and that's not everybody's up. People have other obligations Sunday morning. It's for our schedule when we have to record.
Yeah.
We got 100 people watching the live stream right now, and
Oh.
You know, we got
like 75 of them in the chat room, just chit chatting away.
As the show goes, that's really cool. And you know,
you guys are awesome.
The show, when it comes out, is usually around an hour, but we've been sitting here. It's 11:30 right now. We've been sitting here since I think the stream turned on around 9:30-ish,
yeah.
So there's a lot of the show that doesn't make it into the show.
Yeah.
Because we'll just stop recording and then just sit here and BS with the chat room and go tangentially off on something.
Honestly, I think we had a couple conversations that were much better than the show.
I know. You almost
in the
wish
live part,
if,
yeah.
If storage were allowed, if storage were capable of keeping up, just record the whole thing.
The whole thing and just stick it out there.
Yeah.
We did that for a while, but, you know, then you have like a 3-hour show that doesn't make any sense.
And as they get larger and larger and
oh man
larger
we can't now. We just can't fit them on any servers anymore. So that's
too
that's
much
a
action.
Big, that's a big problem. So we got all that going on, and of course feel free to go look at Illumination Software Creator, yep. RadicalBreeze.com or LundDuke.com if you want the beta for Android, because people are checking that out. And do
that's
me a
awesome.
Favor, everybody. If you see like news stories come out this week, which my guess is you're going to be seeing some news stories this week because there's a couple of reviews floating around going on. Like, you know, if there's like a little upvote button, click on that sucker.
Yeah, if you see an Illumination Software Creator story,
click that
tweet
sucker.
It out.
Tweet it.
Dig it.
Slash dot it, because here's the thing. I need you to.
Yeah.
And Brian has needs. And I'm
Matt's trying
to
pay the mortgage.
You come on, guys.
It's okay, Brian. It's okay.
That's all right. It's all right. Actually,
we'll dig up your story.
Actually, you know what's great, though? So on Slashdot, there's a news story about Illumination on Slashdot. This is a little more Slashdot rant. We post it to Slashdot.
I love that you have to come back at them again.
We post it to Slashdot, and, you know, I make a like a half-assed mention of it. Like I just mention it to people. I'm like, you know, hey, you know, I posted a story on Slashdot. You know, go check it out. Immediately, way upvoted.
Nice.
Like the people.
That's
like,
cool.
People who follow our Twitter feeds and everything else, they're like, dude, that's awesome. They go there. They're like, cool, Linux, Android, cool software development.
Vote for that.
Upvote that. Immediately, almost all the way to red up for upward status. And then,
ooh, nice.
And then immediately, the Mac people that run Slashdot saw that and went, wait a minute. Down
you
all the way.
You should have done is just trick them and say it's a Mac program. Of course you will now with the
iPhone. It is a Mac program.
Yeah.
It does run under OS X anyway.
That's true.
But I don't push that to anyone. I just say, here you go. It runs also on Windows and OS X. We're a Linux-centric shop. Because we're cool.
You should resubmit it as a Mac-centric thing.
I could be like, yeah, Mac development revolutionized.
Right.
And then it'll be the top story on Slashdot.
That's all you got to do,
you know
dude.
What? You know what? Mm. Not going to cater to that.
There you go.
Not going to bend over that to the Slashdot.
You draw the line.
Yeah. This far and no farther. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but that is not this day.
Yeah.
It's one of those moments. I am like Viggo Mortensen awkwardly delivering that line in The Return of the King.
Yeah?
And he's like, but that is not this day. At the end there, you know what I'm talking about?
What if you were more like the Patrick Stewart courageous, I'm fighting the Borg, I'm not going to blow up my ship kind of guy? Because that, you know, with the shotgun and the sleeves showing his guns, that's pretty epic.
Showing his guns.
Oh, you know, that's an old Star Trek joke.
Here's the thing.
Patrick Stewart buffed up for that movie, and Jonathan Frakes was the director, I think, and they just ridiculed him mercifully for getting all buffed up for the movie.
It is kind of funny.
It is.
But here's the thing: I have no guns. You'll notice here, like I'm wearing a t-shirt. This is as short of a shirt as you will ever see. Because if I pull this up, you'll be surprised because you're like, I don't see Brian's arms because literally they don't exist beyond this moment.
Just the bone.
I'm a nerd. I think my fingers have more muscles in them than my arms.
Because the heaviest thing you got to lift is the keyboard and mouse, right?
Seriously.
Maybe the tablet if you get a big battery on.
You know, yeah, I do have a big battery, but honestly,
Lift the tablet, dude. That's
my workout machine.
While you're pooping.
Dude, I just have two tablets. I should just walk around and power walk with tablets.
Yeah, like, you know how in the 80s they used to strap the weights to them? You just strap them to your arms.
You know actually what would be epic? Tablets like this, running Linux with ASCII art screensavers like the ASCII Aquarium, pointed outward so everyone can see them, and I just walk around town.
White man bling, that'd be awesome, dude.
Dude, that is beyond white man bling. That is like white man 1980s retro nerd bling.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, 1980s training montage.
I love it.
Oh, actually, that's a great idea.
It is.
Oh, bad. But you know what, Todd? I'm too tired. I'm not going to do it.
That's true.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go home. I'm going to lay in bed. I'm going to watch some reruns of Better Off Ted, and I'm going to take a nap.
There you have it.
That's really what's going to happen.
That's a good Sunday afternoon.
But when I dream, I'm going to dream about that montage. All right, I think that's all we got. You can check us out at jupiterbroadcasting.com, jupitercolony.com for the forum, facebook.com with Jupiter Broadcasting on it, twitter.com with our names, Brian Lunduke or Chris L-A-S. Apparently, that's his name.
Linux Action Show. Old school.
You've stayed old school.
We used to only have one show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, do you remember that?
No.
We had one show.
I don't remember that. It just feels like so long show. Ago. I know. I know.
One.
I know.
This show.
Yeah.
You guys right there. This show.
It's still the big show.
This is the big
show.
This
big show.
You know what? It's always going to be the big show.
It's the big show. That's what I refer to it as. It'll always be the big show.
You know what? I hear, and this is a rumor, mind you, but over at Revision 3 Studios and Twit Studios, they sit around, when they talk about Linux Action, they say the big show.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure.
It's a rumor, I hear.
I'm pretty sure that's what the internet refers to.
I'm not 100% certain, but I believe, yeah. Leo Laporte sits around and he's like, well, let's do the little show. Twit.
Well,
yeah.
I think Leo calls it the big show because President Obama was referring to it as the big show when he was talking to Putin over in Russia about the big show.
You know, and interesting, the head people in the Tea Party got together with Obama, and they're like, you know what?
Yeah.
The only thing we agree on is the big show.
Yeah, and then also during the UN, they had that whole UN council meeting.
We could go on like this for hours.
And I believe they opened the International Space Station talking about the big show. Oh, my goodness.
You know what I'm going to do right now?
What?
I'm going to end the show.
Okay.